Harry felt badgered, confused, and Hermione did not help as she said in a frightened voice, "Your scar again? But what's going on? I thought that connection had closed." "It did, for a while," muttered Harry. His scar was still painful, which made it hard to concentrate. I think it started opening again whenever he loses control. That's how it used to." "But then you've got to close your mind," said Hermione shrilly. "Harry, Dumbledore didn't want you to use that connection. He wanted you to shut it down. That's why you were supposed to use occlumency. Otherwise Voldemort can plant false images in your mind. Remember?"
"Yeah, I do remember, thanks," said Harry through gritted teeth. He did not need Hermione to tell him that Voldemort had once used this selfsame connection between them to lead him into a trap, nor that it had resulted in Sirius's death. He wished that he had not told them what he had seen and felt. It made Voldemort more threatening, as though he were pressing against the window of the room, and still the pain in his scar was building, and he fought it. It was like resisting the urge to be sick. He turned his back on Ron and Hermione, pretending to examine the old tapestry of the black family tree on the wall. Then Hermione shrieked. Harry drew his wand again and spun around to see a silver Patronus soar through the drawing room window and land upon the floor in front of them, where it solidified into the weasel that spoke with the voice of Ron's father.
"Family safe. Do not reply. We are being watched."
The Patronus dissolved into nothingness. Ron let out a noise between a whimper and a groan and dropped onto the sofa. Hermione joined him, gripping his arm.
"They're all right. They're all right,"
she whispered, and Ron half laughed and hugged her. "Harry," he said over Hermione's shoulder,
It's not a problem," said Harry, sickened by the pain in his head. "It's your family. Of course you're worried. I'd feel the same way."
He thought of Ginny. "I do feel the same way." The pain in his scar was reaching a peak, burning as it had done in the garden of the burrow. Faintly, he heard Hermione say,
"I don't want to be on my own. Could we use the sleeping bags I've brought and camp in here tonight?"
He heard Ron agree. He could not fight the pain much longer. He had to succumb. "Bathroom," he muttered, and he left the room as fast as he could without running. He barely made it. Bolting the door behind him with trembling hands, he grasped his pounding head and fell to the floor. Then, in an explosion of agony, he felt the rage that did not belong to him possess his soul, saw a long room lit only by firelight, and the great blonde Death Eater on the floor, screaming and writhing, and a slighter figure standing over him, wand outstretched, while Harry spoke in a high, cold, merciless voice.
"More, Owl, or shall we end it and feed you to Nagini? Lord Voldemort is not sure that he will forgive this time. You called me back for this, to tell me that Harry Potter has escaped again? Draco, give Owl another taste of our displeasure. Do it, or feel my wrath yourself."
A log fell in the fire. Flames reared, their light darting across a terrified, pointed white face. With a sense of emerging from deep water, Harry drew heaving breaths and opened his eyes. He was spread-eagled on the cold, black marble floor, his nose inches from one of the silver serpent tails that supported the large bathtub. He sat up. Malfoy's gaunt, petrified face seemed branded on the inside of his eyes. Harry felt sickened by what he had seen, by the use to which Draco was now being put by Voldemort. There was a sharp rap on the door, and Harry jumped as Hermione's voice rang out.
"Harry, do you want your toothbrush? I've got it here."
"Yeah. Great. Thanks," he said, fighting to keep his voice casual as he stood up to let her in.